From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of February 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated will be here. Normally, we talk to him in Kansas City. He's stuck in the Lansing, Michigan airport today. And along the way today, we'll hear Dave Dickey with the agricultural news and how CFTC plans to change the rules of free trade. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Hey, thank you so much for bearing with us today as we get started in this Closing Market Report for a Wednesday afternoon. Todd Gleason, of course, I'm snowed in my home, and we had a little technical difficulty getting started. Let's see if we can't get hold of Paul Cooley at this point. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and will help us guide our way through what happened in Chicago. I'm pretty certain that Paul didn't make it into his office today.
Paul.
Either. Hey, Paul, Todd Gleason calling. How are you this afternoon?
Todd.
We're on the air today, live at the moment. Can you tell me, I think you got stuck in at your house today, is that right?
Oh, yes. We got covered up with snow, and I started my day out the normal times, pushing the driveway out and out to the highway, but the blowing snow was the scary part. I understand Chicago O'Hare got 20.2 inches of snow, and that was one reason why, the delayed opening and some of the other economic problems with the short staffs in Chicago.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened in Chicago today. You were able to watch that, I suppose, a bit. Did you have an idea of how things traded?
Well, yeah, we had instant quotes here at the house, which was a big help, and Justin Wood did get into the office at Oakland. But, you know, the commodity funds were very active. It was very strong from the night before. Informa Group came out today with their guest estimate of world production, and they left Argentine and Australian production the same. We do continue to see this concern about the wheat market. One idea is that maybe a lack of snow cover, but my meteorologist that I have the most confidence in said 4 inches enough, and I agree with him. But, you know, sugar prices rallied to record highs. Talk about Nestle said their earnings are going to be off because of high sugar prices. Commodity funds were in there buying very strong. Mubarak says he's going to step it down in September. There was a cyclone in Australia. And, of course, Oprah last night talked about cattle. And both from a vegetarian point of view and from a humanitarian point of view. But it really was kind of kind to the livestock industry. So nothing too much happened. But, you know, it was a classic weather market. It's a classic political market. But in February, it's always a scary month, but it acts pretty strong from this point of view.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that strength and what it might mean. Often we've heard in the last several days or so that many of our analysts are thinking there might be a February break. I take it that you're not in that boat at this point, that you think there's more strength in this marketplace. What fundamentally would support the market?
Yes. Typically, I think a lot of us thought that when the rains did come into Argentina and a good crop in Brazil, that maybe the markets were high enough for the time being. But we continue to see the surprised 440,000 tons of new crop soybeans sold out of the U.S. The Chinese continue to buy soybeans in a big way. And the concern about supplying a better diet to the Mid-East countries have all kept this market strong. Obviously, we're hearing more fertilizer, as far as production's concerned, not a big acreage shift, but at this present time, the market is extremely strong. And, this Aaron Burnett is on CNBC, Financial News Network. She's now in Saudi Arabia, and of course she brings up what happens if there's a little unrest in Saudi Arabia. And of course, everybody says $10 to $15 crude oil prices higher overnight. Well, that's not going to hurt corn prices in central Illinois.
Were you happy to see the new highs made in both soybeans and corn?
Well, I guess so. As a central Illinois landowner, I don't really have too, you can't say bad, it's a thank goodness, I haven't been advocating the short positions, to a great deal. If that person does sell a new crop, I do advocate buying some bull call spreads to protect yourself on that. But the marketplace, as you mentioned, is very, very strong. And, the crude oil, the stock market, that's also a strong help to keep these grains on the financial plus side.
Well, I'll tell you what, make sure you get yourself dug out. I know you'll be back in the office tomorrow morning. And take care, Paul. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, have a profitable day, Todd.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. I'm in my remote studio, actually my home studio at this point. So thank you for bearing with us for the beginning of the program. A little technical difficulty, but not too big of a hurdle to get over. A couple of other notes. Last night, of course, we did not make it to Lincoln, Illinois for our Ag Outlook panel then. That one's been scheduled to March the 31st. And the New Ross, Indiana panel that's scheduled for this evening has been canceled as well. That one's been moved to February the 23rd. So those two Ag panels will still come up in the coming weeks and months. And then, of course, one other note. If you have not yet visited our website at willag.org, that's willag.org, and signed up for our All-Day Ag Outlook, or at least made that phone call to pick up a ticket for All-Day Ag Outlook, which is scheduled for Tuesday, the 8th day of March. Please do so now. Those tickets go fairly quickly. They're $20 a piece. If you've been to the All-Day Ag Outlook, you know that it's the best marketing meeting of the year. It's held at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That's Tuesday, March the 8th. You can visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all the details about the All-Day Ag Outlook, and you'll find all kinds of information from our ag programming, everything from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report right there at willag.org. Dave Dickey will be here in just maybe a minute or so. He'll have all the agricultural news for the afternoon. Be safe out there. The winds are still kicked up from time to time, and it's going to get very, very cold over the next several days. Make sure the animals are taken care of and that you've laid in enough supplies to hold out through the rest of this winter storm. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
In agricultural news, cargo operations at Egyptian ports have come to a virtual standstill as widespread unrest keeps key staff from work and throws the economy into turmoil. Shipping sources say that the Mediterranean terminals, which especially handle bulk and container shipments, including grains, have been affected by the daily curfew across the country. Alexandria Port is not closed, but there is no work. Custom officials are not there, and there is nobody to operate the cranes. Sources say this week that protests were disrupting the country's grains imports, with some shipments from the United States being delayed due to problems related to letters of credit. A study co-sponsored by the United Kingdom suggests that the era of cheap food is at an end, with the real prices of key crops set to rise 50 to 100% during the next 40 years. The report concludes that productivity growth no longer will be able to keep pace with rising demand for food, adding that another agricultural revolution is needed, including genetic engineering to grow more food on the same land area without damaging the environment or requiring excessive inputs of energy and fertilizer. Argentine port workers will call off a week-long strike in key grain ports following a government order. The strike has paralyzed soy crushing plants and ports. Argentina's government late Tuesday ordered unions to suspend the strike for 15 days so that they can hold talks with company bosses. Standard Chartered today says that weakening crush margins in China have not yet reduced imports of U.S. soybeans, which reached 16.7 million metric tons in the October-January period. The research house projected global soybean prices at $15.50 a bushel in the second quarter of this year. Candy maker Hershey says its fourth quarter profit rose 6.9% as holiday shoppers in both the United States and emerging markets delivered strong sales. The company said today that its net income was $135.5 million, or 59 cents per share, for the 3 months ending December 31st. That's up from $126.8 million, or 55 cents per share a year earlier. Adjusted income was $140.4 million, or 61 cents a share. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can hear anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Up next, you know the Commodity Futures Trading Commission has proposed changing the rules of free trade. I'll have more on what CFTC has in mind.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, regulates commodity futures and options markets in the United States. Its mission, as taken directly from the CFTC website, is to protect market users and the public from fraud, manipulation, and abusive practices related to the sale of commodity and financial futures and options, and to foster open, competitive, and financially sound futures and option markets. It's in the news today for almost the same reasons it was conceived and created. The agency opened in 1974, during the heyday of the last big permanent shift upward in the commodity markets. The price of most commodities doubled in the early to mid-1970s. That was the last time they doubled and stayed doubled until we think, well, right now. CFTC was given a new mandate by the U.S. government in 2010. It's called the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. It requires CFTC to establish position limits for certain physical commodity derivatives. The key to this change, says University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin, is that it aggregates all the positions a firm or individual holds in the swap and future markets together.
This is the idea of trying to eliminate a supposed loophole where someone can evade the speculative position limits by, in essence, trading in the cash over the counter market.
So does it actually, when it aggregates, does it make this position limit smaller in total or not?
Effectively, it does, because the firms that these are targeted towards have massive positions in this over-the-counter market. So when you put them together with the futures, it's likely to bind on some of the really big players.
So some would say, what's the problem with limiting positions? A position is a paper representative of a commodity like corn and can be used to either buy or sell the physical commodity. If the paper position is too tightly limited by CFTC, then it might force some firms into the cash market instead. And in that case, real unregulated hoarding might take place.
No, that's, I think, an excellent point and an example of what could be some of the unintended consequences of this. If it's put in place, it's proposed, if it is in fact voted in and put in place, and the limits are finally in the final rule set tight enough that those kind of big market participants are limited in the size of their positions. If they want to own commodities, they're going to own commodities. They'll just go to the cash market. And I don't think that that's really the kind of direction that we want to send those kind of market participants.
It is true the price of commodities like crude oil, corn, wheat, and soybeans have doubled in recent years. The question at hand is, have they doubled because they're worth more, or have they doubled because of an outside influence like a long-only index fund? Well, commodities are different than stocks. You can buy a stock and then sell it. A commodity, on the other hand, can be bought or sold without actually owning it. That means for every buyer, there is a seller, or the trade does not happen, says Scott Irwin.
That's a fundamental reality of these markets. Doesn't mean that these kind of large-scale financial flows don't have any impacts, at least conceptually. But my bottom line is I've dug and dug and dug and dug and dug in the data, and I can't find the smoking gun.
The proposed CFTC rules regulating position limits for derivatives are in an open comment period through March 28th. CFTC has a new online comment process. It is easiest to search Google for the phrase open comment periods. Click on the first search result, open comment periods-CFTC, and scroll to the bottom of the page looking for position limits for derivatives. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from my remote studio. That's the one in my home. This afternoon, here's what the weather forecast looks like. It says occasional flurries around, a little below the snow, too. There'll be winds about 15 to 17 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way up to 24. Wind chills will be down pretty slight, between 0 and 5 below, with just a 20-degree temperature outside. Tonight, mostly cloudy, gradually becoming mostly clear, a low of negative 5, wind chill values between negative 10 and negative 15, west-northwest winds at 8 to 16 miles an hour. They'll gust as high as 22, and Thursday should be sunny and cold, with a high of just 9 degrees. More on the weather when we return in just 2 minutes.
It's Brewhog Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1659, Jan van Riebeck, the first governor of the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa, made the first wine from grapes grown at the Cape. He planted the vineyard in 1655. In 1795, the French government offered a prize of 12,000 francs for a method of preserving food for transport to the French army. It was eventually won by Nicholas Appert, who invented a successful method for canning. In 1820, Jean Bor died. He was the inventor of the sugar granulating process and founder of the sugar industry in Louisiana. In 1869, the removable steel plow blade was invented by James Oliver. In 1887, the first Groundhog Day was observed in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. In 1897, Alfred L. Crowley of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, patented an ice cream scooper. His basic design is still used today. In 1913, Carl Gustav Patrick de Lavel died, a Swedish scientist and inventor. Among his inventions was the centrifugal cream separator and a vacuum milking machine. And in 1996, Ray McIntyre died, a chemical engineer who worked for Dow Chemical Company. He invented styrofoam. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. He's stuck in an airport in Lansing, Michigan. Hi, Drew. How are you making it today?
Well, we're hanging in there, along with, thousands of other people across the country, stranded by this phenomenal blizzard that we had across the Midwest. It does look like it lived up to all of its expectations in many respects. I think because it was so well advertised, it turned out to not feel quite so bad. When we actually got into the heart of it, I think it almost became anticlimactic with all the publicity that it got. But I think we ended up with snow totals reaching 20 inches in northeastern Oklahoma, 19 across Missouri, over 20 inches in parts of northern Illinois, and more than a foot of snow in many other areas from the eastern part of Oklahoma into portions of the Great Lakes region. A lot of strong wind. We had some wind gusts getting up to 60 and 70 miles per hour up there in the Chicago area yesterday afternoon. We've had considerable blowing and drifting. We've had a lot of ice accumulation across parts of the lower eastern Midwest. And very heavy rain and some strong to severe thunderstorms in the Gulf Coast state. So it's been a really wild week. But you're absolutely correct in assessing the situation that perhaps there was maybe a little less damage done by the storm. I am concerned, however, about the conditions in the western portions of the U.S., in the hard red wheat country in particular. Some of that region did not get real good snow coverage. It snowed in most of that region, but the wind blew so hard that I think a lot of fields became exposed. The wheat crop became exposed to the colder temperatures, and we have been below zero the past two mornings. Now, some of that wheat crop in Kansas and Oklahoma and Colorado has really had a tough go of it anyway, with the crop not being well established. So I'm a little bit concerned this morning that or this afternoon that perhaps we are looking at a little bit of spotty damage across hard red wheat country. And I think the marketplace has already obtained a little bit of that psyche as well. And unfortunately, there's going to be so much variability from one field to the next. It's going to be absolutely impossible to assess this until we are at the harvest, I think.
And turn your attention to other wheat crops around the planet. The wheat crop in Australia, it nearly drowned, actually did drown to some extent. There's one to be harvested in Argentina, and maybe you can talk about soybeans and corn there too.
Yeah, certainly. I think that the harvest season in Argentina has probably been okay. And yes, you're right, we did lose crop in Australia. Certainly the quality of the crop there was certainly serious. But in Argentina, and for the most part in many other areas around the world, it doesn't seem to be nearly as big of a problem right now as what we've seen in the past. The harvest in Argentina has gone well, and the rainfall pattern in Argentina right now has been basically good for the soybean and late sorghum crop there. It has come too late. The precipitation has come too late for a real substantial improvement in the corn crop, and that's where the biggest losses will likely come. But as we go through the next few weeks, we're going to see a regular occurrence of showers and thunderstorms in both Argentina and Brazil to support the crops in both of those countries. You might keep in the back of your mind, though, about the dryness going on in China. Some of the wheat crop there is definitely going to be struggling in the early weeks of spring.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.